Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that is so befuddled by trade talk. It spent most of the afternoon wondering why Smash Mouth had traded a conditional first rounder for Jack Johnson. It's time to do a little stargazing. With us, as always, is Mark. But more importantly, we've got someone new joining the podcast. Taylor 2.0, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm happy to be here. I've been trying to get you guys on the same schedule, or get me on the same schedule as y'all. So I'm finally here,
and
I'm happy about it.
Mark living that jet set West Coast lifestyle has really put a crimp in us getting this thing flexible.
Yes. You know, I watch too much hockey, and so I have to fit it in.
That's right. Priorities.
That's right.
It's very gracious of you. Very gracious. But as you know, I don't think you're new at this point because you've been with the site for several months now, but first season, and always like to initiate the newbies to the podcast, at least. Tell us a little bit about your kind of journey to Stars fandom, favorite players, that whole bit. Give folks a little bit of a vibe check on you as a Stars fan.
So I've only been into hockey probably like 5 or 6 years. My ex-husband actually played, his family is from Boston. So when we were in college, he played a little bit of like beer league roller hockey. And so I went, but I wasn't really like super into it. And we moved back to DFW like 2017 and started going to games. And then right around that time we got divorced, and I just like immersed myself into hockey as like to fill my time up. And I've always been into sports, so that wasn't anything new, but it went from like 0 to 100 for me.
I mean, like it's getting out of a kind of podunk town like Boston and into a real hockey mad environment like Dallas. I can totally see things taking off.
Yeah. So I started going, and then like 2018, I was like going to games by myself because I just wanted to be at the games. And then I found myself on Twitter, and the rest is history.
Wow. Pretty much. Twitter with a positive contribution to somebody's life. I think that's,
you know what?
That's borderline miraculous.
That's how I started writing. That's where I found my best friend, is through Stars Twitter. So it's a pain, but I have to credit for like a lot of the things that I have now. So.
Well, and Taylor does a bunch of stuff outside. I mean, she has a wonderful Twitter account to follow. And then she also has a podcast that she does with her bestie that is I would say moderately Stars related, but it's also just kind of frolicking fun. So
yeah.
The best of both worlds.
Yeah. It's a lot of nonsense and a lot of hockey.
we'll plug it. What's the name? I think I'm totally into cross promotion.
It's called Two Girls, One Stanley Cup.
Nice.
So, it's a little inappropriate if you're not into like crude humor, but we do talk a lot about hockey and stuff. So
I mean, these are the horseshit Dallas Stars. So I think
It's been a lot of fun, and it's done pretty well. So we started in August, and it's just been like, you know, talk about hockey with your best friend, and people listen to it. So it's been a lot of fun.
That's right. And just I'm having flashbacks to 2018, and we were still, that was the year they lost the organization shaking game to St. Louis in overtime. And that was near the end of the Sagan Radulov Ben trifecta as the team that really, the trio that really drove. Also, wow, I pulled up some stats. Fun fact, Matthias Janmark outscored Roope Hintz that season.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing, knowing.
I mean, he had played almost 30 more games than Hintz did. So
and now he's moved on, and he's outscored Denis Gurianov.
That's right. Womp, womp. Dadmon's pretty close to having outscored Denis Gurianov after one night.
Yeah, give him a couple more games and it's over.
any jerseys, any memorabilia? What have you collected anything as you've
Oh yeah, I have like 13 Stars jerseys. I have way too many. I just got
prize collection. Big game tomorrow night. Who do you rep?
So Miro Heiskanen is my guy. That is my favorite guy. I'm big on defense, and he's just, you know, he does it flawlessly. Yeah. But I just got a Jake Ottinger jersey back from Blake's. I had a blank one, and I got it customized. So I wore that yesterday to the game, and now it's already got one loss under its belt.
So it was your fault then.
I've only missed 4 home games this year, so I was at every.
All her fault.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I definitely was at every, like, those 3 overtime losses in a row. I was at those, and I was like, "Am I the problem? Is it me?" So yeah, I go to a lot of games.
If you're coaching the Dallas Stars power play, then the answer is emphatically yes. You are the problem.
So actually, I go to like the Lone Star Brahmas games. If y'all are aware of them, they're NAHL here in North Richland Hills. I went, it was on the 20th, on the holiday, and Steve Spott and Nazardine were sitting behind me, like with papers, like scouting. And I was like,
trying to get some ideas.
I was like, the power play is going so poorly that they're looking for, like, you know, 17-year-olds to come help us out.
If memory serves, the Brahmas are a spiritual successor to the old CHL franchise that played in the Central Hockey League for a while.
Yeah.
And that was not my first foray, but in college, I worked for the Memphis River Kings. So I remember Brahmas games and seeing them come to town. It was a little different, but them and the old Tulsa Oilers, Colorado Eagles, the whole bit, it was an experience. Mm-hmm. I'm a little concerned that they were scouting that particular, but you know what? Hey, I'll try anything at this point.
Yeah, it was really odd because they had each team's like roster. Like I saw the paper and they had the roster and I was like, no way. Like, what are they doing here? And it was kind of cool to see them like spending their day off still, you know, at the local hockey rinks. But yeah, I thought that was odd. Hmm. And then I was like, man, our team is down bad.
That's not like great the Stars. Right now, yeah. Right?
It's really kind of a bleak moment in the season.
Which team are you talking about?
The Dallas Stars.
Oh, Dallas! I've been watching a lot of Idaho Steelheads, so I'm happy as a clam. We're just killing it.
Texas is pretty good too. They put a hurting on Bakersfield on Saturday. Lost Friday though, so that
was But you know that was kind of like you've been on the road for a long time. You make it home and you kind of wake up and think, oh yeah, I got to go to the rink and play a game today. And you know, 2 periods in, you're down and you don't have the energy to get it back into third. So yeah, they imposed their will in the second game. And I think that's the game went to.
Saturday night's game was, oh, you think you can hang with us? That's cute. Let's show you a thing or two. It was a masterclass.
Speaking of masterclasses, let's talk about Stars overtime.
I would prefer, I'd prefer not.
No way you just use that as a sick one.
I got millions of them.
Master class. All right. I mean, it kind of Jamie Benn's fault? Question mark.
Well, I mean, I would say Pete DeBoer's fault. This is something you have to recognize. And I think was this you earlier today, Taylor, who threw something out there about throwing some fast kids out there and just seeing what happens?
I have said that, but no, not today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but he's. Playing slow guys just doesn't seem to work. So, hey, you know, after how many have we lost now, maybe try something different. And obviously they aren't taking my suggestion, which is to just throw, you know, Foxa and the defensive cohorts out there and try and hold the puck against the boards for 5 minutes so you can make it to the shootout where you're going to win. You know, they haven't taken that suggestion. So they might as well try something else.
The first overtime win that we had that was like after a little stint of not winning was the one where we got a penalty and we were playing 4-on-3 for a while. And I was like, it's crazy how we were just defending and that worked for us. We weren't even trying to score and we somehow made it through the 5 minutes to go to the shootout.
See, and that was my inspiration. And it's like, why not do that on 3-on-3 where it's even easier to do it?
Yeah. There's part of me that I'm pulling my hair out at the logic behind why don't they just play defensive-minded 3-on-3 hockey and hope for the shootout. That's we have definitely reached a low and then blasted right through the floor if that's the conversation.
But it's not really the low, because if you do look at it, the Stars top 3 or 4 shootout guys are league-wide really, really good. I mean, Pavelski, Robertson, and Sagan are 40% guys. And if you throw them up against anybody else, we're going to win a lot of shootout games, especially if you throw Otter in net where he's saving stuff.
He does save things. That's kind of his deal.
Yeah. He's pretty good at it.
I don't know if this is like taboo to say, but I feel like he's not been well in overtime. Like a lot of the ones we lose, I'm just like, you make those saves day in and day out in regulation. And then overtime comes and he just turns into a different goalie.
Huh.
I don't know if you guys felt that way, but I definitely have.
Is it a pace
of play thing, you think? I think a lot of goalies do, though.
Maybe just because it's so open and it's just, you know, they have a lot more to cover. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the general nature. I haven't looked at this, but I'm guessing that the save percentage in overtime is significantly less than the save percentage in 5-on-5, just because it's much more open ice and guys have a little more time to pick their corners.
Yeah. It would stun me if it wasn't. Frankly, I'd like you said, I haven't newsflash. We haven't done the research here on the Stargazing podcast, but it sure does pass the smell test. It does stand to reason, right? More shots, more plays off the rush, more of these, you know, miss wide and it's a 2-on-1 going the other direction things. It follows a thread that the chances you'd face in overtime would be of a higher quality, harder to stop, all of the things for an NHL goaltender. So I can see it. I mean,
right. And except for the Dallas Stars, these other teams are putting really good players out on the ice.
I guess the only thing in my mind, if I've never been a goalie, but to me, there's not, you know, you're not getting screened. So that seems like it might be a little easier, but you know, then you have more open ice, more quality chances, I guess.
Shooters have, I guess, maybe the counterbalance to lack of screens is the shooters have more time and space to, you know, pick corners and actually, you know, follow, create intent behind their shots versus when it's 5-on-5 and things are as congested, you're kind of throwing it on net and hoping a little bit, even, you know, you don't exactly have time to really, you know, I'm imagining Zach Galifianakis's character in The Hangover, the calculating the angles and everything in their brains as they prepare to shoot. You don't necessarily have the space and time to do that when there are 5 skaters on the ice.
Yeah. Not that I think Jake Ottinger is the problem at all. I think it's
My big takeaway from your first podcast is that you hate Jake Ottinger and you want to trade it immediately.
No, she just got a sweater.
Yeah.
You're obviously wrong.
Well, she's probably going to put an X through his number on the back. It's one of those like anti sweaters, you know?
Yeah, I'm just going to put 63 over it because he scored a goal in his first game. So,
I mean, it was a good goal, too.
It was dirty. And I was like, we automatically won the trade because Habs fans were convinced that they like really did it to us. And I was like, if he scores one goal, that's more than Giryanov is going to score for the rest of the season. Just one.
I mean,
we've already won.
It might be, although playing in an environment where there are no stakes and defense doesn't matter might be the exact perfect thing Giryanov needs to get untracked.
Well, and Montreal has this wonderful theory, which they believe so fine, that Marty St. Louis can fix anyone.
I mean, in theory, he got small goal boy going.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe it works. I hope it works. It's in the Eastern Conference. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I hope Giryanov does well. If you told me that he doesn't score for the rest of the season, I wouldn't be surprised. If you told me he scored 10 goals for the rest of the season, I also wouldn't be surprised. There's no in-between for me and Giryanov.
Yeah. No, he's one of those guys, right? You could give me literally anything. Oh, yeah, this past game he scored twice, then accidentally sat on the other team's bench, had a hot dog. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure.
Fine. Yeah.
He's a high variability guy. Fun fact about Dadonov, though, is I was just because you mentioned, you know, the performance and winning the trade and all, he was shooting 5.6% in Montreal, and he is a 13% career shooter. So there is something to suggest that the 4 goals that Dadonov scored in Montreal are perhaps depressed by his surroundings, as anyone would be depressed by his surroundings.
Yeah, once I realized he did well against or under Pete DeBoer last year, I was like, oh, I'm not even worried slightly about it. DeBoer's system's going to make anyone better, but especially since he's familiar with it.
And honestly, kind of got thrown into it. He played 13:57, 18 total shifts. He had the goal, of course, and it was a very good goal. Had 5 shots on net. It was on the power play at point. So it looks like, you know, this is they picked him up for scoring in the middle 6. And based on a comprehensive and conclusive sample size of exactly one game, looks like that's how Pete DeBoer is planning on using him.
Well, all I can say is I said they needed to play him with Ben and Johnston. They did play him with Ben and Johnston. I feel completely justified.
That sort of washes away your Jamie Benn would have one goal by Thanksgiving hot take from earlier in the season.
See, I don't know. I don't mind them putting him with Jamie and Wyatt, but Delandria with Tyler and Mason is not what we need either. So
they've historically been so good. The only concern I have is between Delandria and Marchment, the amount of abuse that people are going to take getting, you know, reverse hit and taking hits to the face that aren't called is just going to be exponential.
They're too much chaos for me. Like, they both, like, never stay on their feet. They're just, like, little, you know, Tasmanian devils. And so that's, like, too – that line, them together, is, like, too much chaos for me.
That, and I think that Sagan needs – he benefits from having – like you said, he benefits from having one Tasmanian devil. He needs somebody that can move the puck, right? Yes. He needs somebody with that sort of subtle offensive instinct, working the give and goes, two-on-ones. Like, he needs that, right? His goal, his assist to Jamie Benn, I think, is a good example of the and I know it was shorthanded, but it's a good example of the type of wavelength that he needs at least one of his line mates to be on.
Yeah, and that person needs to be, like, cool, calm, and collected. And I have to be honest, I don't know the ins and outs of Dodonov's game because I didn't watch him that closely. But from what I read, he's kind of a playmaker, and his game was a lot more smooth. So I would be willing to give them three a chance together just to see. I mean, Jamie and Wyatt and Delly's lines have been fine considering, you know, what we have. So I'm just curious to see if they'll try them together. Because that's the line I think that needs the most help, but I'm not sure that he's the answer either.
Oh, you're pulling it right back to the dark side. That's where everybody was going. And yeah. I'll just come back and say the first 10 games of the year, it was Marchment, Sagan, and Delandria. And that's when Marchment was at his best.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a great line, and then they pulled Delandria off, and all of a sudden all the numbers went into the shitter. Yeah. So I would say let's go back to that, and you know, initial signs on Ben Johnston and Dodonov are darn good.
And I mean, Marchment had a beauty of an assist last night.
Yes, yeah, that pass was sick.
He still can't score to save his life. He as good as that pass was as bad as him failing to get a shot on that was. But
you know what's going to happen though? Marchment's going to get a hat trick. Pavelski's going to get a hat trick. We're going to put up a 10 spot on somebody one of these days.
Oh, you hope so. Pavelski at the post or crossbar. Sorry, last night again. That wraparound as well. Like,
yeah, and the post. Yeah, it was nuts.
Did those two accidentally like kick over a cemetery or something without realizing?
They had to like dig on a like Indian burial grounds or something. Like, they have pissed someone off, and I think they just need one goal each to fall in, and then all will be right in the world. But you can tell.
And goal Mason, game. Yep.
Mason is just playing so frustrated. And I feel like, you know.
I would be.
I've played sports. I feel for him.
His last goal, I think it's 30 games at this point. It was December and it was an empty netter. He hasn't beaten a goalie since, I think, November.
Yeah.
Sigh. And I feel like every time I bring up that stat, it gets bigger. You know, like next time I go, he hasn't beaten a goalie since 1942.
Yeah, since he last scored, Ryan Suter has scored.
Ryan Suter was a rookie.
I saw Yilmark's goal scored that goalie goal, and someone was like, he has more goals than Ryan Reeves. And I was like, he has the same amount as Ryan Suter. And I am not a Suter stan, I'll just put it that way. But I flew to Vegas. The game he scored, I flew to Vegas and I was sitting behind the bench and he scored in my face. And I think that was personal.
Just to rub it in?
Yes.
I mean, well, apparently at this point, you should do that more often.
At this point, Ullmark might be more agile on his skates than Ryan Suter as well, in all of his pads.
Has to be.
Sigh. Well, you know, it's. I will say, and we're going to talk trades predominantly, but the last point I'll make is I think we are still at crisis point. Like, the power play, they should have buried Vegas multiple, you know, 5-on-3 opportunities. The power play let them down against a Vancouver team that was willing to give the game away. And Dallas, they got the one power play goal, but it was on the rush. So they still haven't cracked it. And that's the concern level is definitely elevating, I would say.
I don't know if y'all have touched on this in previous episodes, but I just think back to like the first 2 months where we had the puck all the time and our passes, we were just cycling the puck and we can't make a clean pass now to save our lives. Our puck control has gone down the drain. And I don't understand how professional athletes just lost that mid-season.
Team-wide yips.
And it really feels like that first like Winnipeg overtime loss is like when I felt like it started to go by the wayside, and now here we are.
It certainly, I mean, we have touched a little bit, but I think it's still a problem and it's still worth talking about. To me, it's a lot, like you're saying, the passes, the opportunities are still there. The lanes, the looks, it's the fundamentals of what they're trying to create in terms of shooting lanes and possession. But it's exactly like you said, it's instead of the pass getting across for Robertson to score on a one-timer, instead of it getting to where it needs to be, it's in somebody's skates or it's too far ahead. And so instead of being able, instead of being fluid, it's pass, catch, catch, pat. You know, there's that extra heartbeat. And in the NHL, that'll kill you. You don't have that extra time.
Yeah, or you just have to make an amazing catch. I mean, to take a look at that Johnston goal from a couple nights ago where he had to pretty much, you know, catch it off of his off of his shin and drop it down onto the ice and hit it in on the same motion.
Yeah.
Well, he was excited about the kickoff of the MLS season. So
I just don't know where you lose that and how to fix it mid-season. That's not something you can practice, right? I mean, you can practice passing, but in a game where there's people and their sticks and their skates and you're moving, I don't know how to fix it, but I feel like that's the main issue we have.
Well, unfortunately,
they don't either. No, that's where the acquisition of a guy like Dadonov comes into play. And I think you fix it by jolting the units, by making a change, by, you know, maybe giving somebody an opportunity to watch it. It's sort of like sending a player up to the press box, but in a much smaller context, right? You break it by giving somebody a breather and getting them kind of out of the, you know, because right now you have to think, and this is amateur sport psychology, so it could be totally wrong, but you have, they're aware of what's going on. They're aware that they used to be one of the best power plays in the NHL and now they're just not. So you have to think that when they come over the boards, there's some element of, okay, this is the one, we're going to get it back on track, right? And that leads into that, you know, the old adage of gripping the stick too tight, right? So having more personnel that you can rotate in and out, maybe that, you know, having a different brain and a different set of hands gives you a little bit different of a look. You get that first one and things get unchecked a little bit.
I mean, it's like anything else. They're overthinking. The hockey brain that's in the forefront of the brain needs to shut off and it all needs to be instinct.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. All of a sudden, the puck's in the net, and you know how you did it, but you didn't have to think hard to make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's validation that, okay, this works. I don't have to try and make the perfect play and, you know, overthink it. I can just make the play that I see and have confidence that there's going to be a good outcome.
And that's why I'm not as worried as you are, apparently, because I think somebody's going to score a butt goal. It's going to go in. All of a sudden, the floodgates open, and then all of this is in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not panicked yet, but I think there's some major issues they need to address, and I think we still need to add someone.
A message from the attorneys at Greening Law PC, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. If you have been hurt in a car accident, experienced malpractice from a physician, hospital, or were injured on the premises of a business, then call the lawyers at Greening Law. They have represented clients from car accidents to birth injuries to sexual assault cases involving clergy or hospitals. The staff at Greening Law, better known as the Green Team, fights your legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. You know, we talk a lot on this podcast about our fierce Dallas Stars. The Green Team is your fierce legal competitor against insurance companies. So what are you waiting for? Consultations are free. They only get paid if you get compensated. So give them a call at 972-934-8900. Again, that number is 972-934-8900. Call now. Principal office is located in Dallas, Texas.
I was going to say that's a perfect. So then, Taylor, you don't think, I'm going to ask you two questions, right? So first, and I think you've just answered it, you don't think that Dadonov is enough. And then the second question is, put on your Jim Neal thinking mustache. Do you think that there's another move to come?
I don't think Dadonov was the answer. No, I think it was a really I want to think that it was just mainly to create some more cap space, but I think it was so low risk with like a little bit of upside, because even if Dadonov didn't score, neither was Giryanov. So we couldn't be hurt by that trade, right? Yep. So it could only go up. So I think it was so low risk that I was just not impressed almost. I just was like, yeah, you know, anyone could be better than Giryanov. I don't think we're done. I hope we're not done. But I think you got to have someone to be with Tyler and Mason, or we don't, you know, have a strong playoff run.
And by waiting to the deadline, the way that cap space accrual works, and don't ask me to explain it because I can't, it looks like Dallas has between $2.7 and $2.9 million equivalent cap space if they're talking about a pickup just for the end of the season. So they do, shockingly, for a team that is basically at the cap, they do have the ability to do something. Assets are a little bit of a problem. They don't have their first round pick this coming draft because of Lundqvist. They also don't have a third. And so, you know, Nil historically has wanted to have some selection. So if they go draft pick in terms of what they dangle for a deal, all of a sudden, if you're Jim Nil, are you willing to sit out two consecutive first rounds? Are you willing to consider, you know, sitting out a first round and then a second? You're getting into some asset management territory that might be worrying.
Yeah.
Or you're looking at, you know, who do you move, right? Which I think we've talked previously, and Kane actually going to New York has helped this. But I think we've kind of talked, it doesn't feel like this is a team that's going to, you know, flip Logan Stankoven for some elite premium, you know, rental.
Yeah.
They're probably shopping, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they could go find another asset like Evgeny Dadonov, right? Another guy that's comfortable in that middle six.
You know, the Jets got Nino Niederreiter for a second round pick. And I understand being conservative with your draft picks, but that to me is a player that's worth a second round pick. If that's, you know, that asking price is honestly really low, in my opinion. And so if you can pick up someone like that who can put up, you know, some pretty good numbers for a second round pick. And I did read that Jim Neal was kind of waiting till Friday to kind of see what teams are going to deal someone out of desperation, which is very Jim Neal like, you know, he makes good deals. But I think I would have liked to see Giryanov in a package for someone a little better. And my like dark horse that may not even be possible is Konechny. They said they weren't shopping him, but they would listen to offers. And he's someone that you could retain a little bit. His cap hit is $5.5 million. That's doable even for next year if we really wanted to make it work. So I don't know. I don't know who's out there. And like Dadonov, we weren't even really linked to him. That was out of complete nowhere. So I don't know.
I mean, forward-wise, and it's a name that I've seen, I think, maybe once or twice as, you know, .. and Florida still in the mix. I've seen some chatter that Declare might be on the available just because they need to clear some cap space. Mm-hmm. And there'd probably need to be some solid. I think his hit is $3 million. And while, you know, getting rid of Giryanov helps with that, and the fact that Dadonov is not signed after the season helps with that. But, you know, that would be kind of a moonshot. If he is back from the Achilles problem he's had, he would certainly help from the athleticism side of things. He's got some scoring touch. You know, that could be that I just, like I said, as I was skimming through the options, thinking about what might be realistic, he kind of leapt out as, well, if this guy's actually available, that's kind of exactly where Dallas should be shopping right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm sure he's going to come make a trade on Friday of someone that, you know, we didn't even know was on the market. That wouldn't surprise me at all, but I hope he does something. I was just talking to, I was on another podcast right before this, and we were talking about Calgary is rumored to be like sellers now, and someone like Tyler Toffoli, I think, would be, if we could get him, his cap hit isn't, I think it's like 4.25 or something like that for the next 2 years. Like that could be someone we could be in on that would help tremendously if we're willing to part with, you know, a few pieces, but.
Yeah. And if they're willing to do so, yeah, Toffoli would be signed. He's signed through 23-24 at 4.25. So yeah, Dallas would likely have to unload something, but I think that's a good option as well. Mark, you've been a little bit quiet. What are any thoughts on the forward lines?
Well, I've been sitting here thinking that I'm ready to step in and do my old Saturday night live routine as Dan Aykroyd in Point Counterpoint, and just I think we need to take a step back and say and ask ourselves, what are we trying to accomplish?
Yep.
And I think that's really two questions. You say, is there a deal out there that makes it significantly more likely that we're going to make it out of the Western Conference? And if the answer to that is yes, is that, okay, what kind of player can that be that's not going to ruin our future? And then the second question, of course, is what's it going to take in order to bring somebody in who's going to give us the chance to win the Stanley Cup?
Yeah.
And at this point, I don't know that there's a way that you can say that you, with an unlimited budget, I'm not sure that you could make yourself a favorite over Boston at this point.
Yeah.
And so what are we trying to buy? Are we trying to buy ourselves a good run in the playoffs? I would argue that the team that's currently there has a pretty decent shot at making a good run at the Western Conference Championship. And so if you are going to if you're going to mortgage your future for something that you already have a chance at, why are you doing it? And then the second question, I think, is you really don't want to go overboard here because you're not going to be the favorite against the East no matter what. And so I hate to say it, but I'm somebody who said, you know, the Dodonov trade, it gives you it lets you go into the room and say, we brought you in somebody. We fixed a hole. Now use those reinforcements and go get it done.
So I don't disagree. And I'm very much in the camp of I wouldn't do a big deal either. The one thing I think about is the bubble cup run, and he's gone now, but the impact that Denis Gurianov had, kind of scoring lights out, right? So I think if you're the Stars, the logic is, no, there's probably is not one piece unless, you know, the piece you have that's going to give you a chance against Boston is Jake Oettinger, and he's already on the lineup, right? So your hope is that you get the goaltending you got against Calgary. And then I think what you're really looking at is you look at the forward group as kind of a collection of lottery tickets. And you're hoping that if you can get Calgary Oettinger, and if you can shorten your bench defensively and play Muro out of his mind, right? And then you can get just, you know, one other forward line going like the first line goes, right? If you can do that, then no, it doesn't make you a favorite against a team like Boston, but they gave Tampa a pretty good series without that second line going. And I think what it does is it lets you kind of talk yourself into, well, if you can get just one other guy going, then all of a sudden maybe the power play starts clicking. And if you can get into the playoffs with first half of the season power play, Calgary, Oettinger, and, you know, kind of traditional high level play from the first line, then you're scary.
Well, I think though, with what's happened with Ben and Johnston and player X, whether that's Dodonov or whether it's DeLandre or whoever fits play in that mask slot.
Please, they need a masked player.
But I think that gives you a go-to second line. I think I was looking at one of the graphs from Money Puck and the Ben Johnston DeLandre line finally got enough minutes together where they qualified to make it there, and they were second in expected goal percentage. Mm-hmm. So
5.44 or something like that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if you're talking about a viable top two lines, I think you have it. And then the question is I think this is where Taylor was going. Then, okay, you have Marchman and Sagan to figure out.
Yeah. So I think for me, like, I think next year's better odds at our cup window. That's why, no, would I make a big package for a rental like Patrick Kane? Absolutely not. But if you can get someone like Konechny or Toffoli that has a couple years for a low cap hit and you can set yourself up for next year and maybe throw a Hail Mary this year, I think that's more where my mind is, because we all know once you get in the playoffs, it's kind of a crapshoot. Boston is there, but the president's curse is real. The East is really stacked. Like, anything could happen. And so I think if we just do two things, set ourselves up for a miracle run, you know, like 2020 was, and we give ourselves someone who is going to help us next year or the next year without selling the future. I'm not down for that either. But I think there is someone there that we could probably find that makes sense to us with a little bit of term that's not outrageous and that won't tie our hands.
I think one thing that maybe people are misjudging, I think Jim Neal's pretty nervous about where the Stars sit as far as what's happening with the cap for next year.
Yeah.
And really what you're doing, you're losing Hudobin, you're losing Glenn Denning. You have to make a decision on what's going on with Kiviranta. You know, if they do bring him back, I wouldn't be surprised if they bring him back at a minimum contract. But there isn't a whole lot really coming off the books, and you have some contracts that are really coming on the books. And so the Stars don't have a lot of leeway. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're playing it so tight with all their forwards, and you get the Freddies going up and the Freddies coming down and all this other stuff. They aren't really, I wouldn't be surprised if they aren't saving the cap space that's out there, not to bring in an additional player, but to offset the performance bonuses that they know they're going to have, so that that isn't another hit going into next year's cap.
Well, yeah. Especially, and it's a topic for maybe the offseason with all of the stuff going on with the regional sports networks and the potential there. The cap was uncertain already and is now even more so. I think you're right. I think there is an aversion, clearly an aversion. Part of the calculus of the Gurionov-Dadonov swap is, even if they had somehow decided to keep Gurionov, the qualifying offer was what, 110% of $2.9 million. And it was going to be, it was going to start with a three. And that's just not something this team is in a position to do right now.
Yeah.
So you're really talking about maybe $5 or $6 million until you start playing some really interesting cap gymnastics as far as what you have to do to improve the team for next year. And I think the internal thought is probably that you're going to improve it by bringing people up. I think you have some Harley money that's going to become available. I think you have a hope, cross your fingers, that you have some Stankoven. Maybe start of the year, maybe certainly as an early call up, Maverick Bourque, all these people are making under $1 million. But if that doesn't work out, you really don't have that much to bring in an impact player for next year. And the last thing you want to do is to be that team that's coming into the new season that where everybody else has improved themselves and you haven't.
And the other thing is injuries, right? I'm knocking on wood, I swear, but Dallas has not had to deal, hence missed some time. But outside of that, Dallas hasn't really had to deal with a significant injury. And that's part of it. It's one thing to sit and look at a roster and say, well, with every single person healthy, why don't they spend this $2.9 million and go find something else that'll help them? Well, what if we have a seat? What if people aren't? And all of a sudden that cap space is more for, all this, you have to go find a replacement rather than an upgrade.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it's mid-level, I mean, it's just the impact of even, Markman finally takes a hit to his face that does actual damage as opposed to cosmetic damage. That's a humongous amount that you're going to have to eat on the cap just to come in and have somebody replace him. And they've been running bare bones the whole year. So that's the player whose salary is going to go straight to the cap if you have to deal with an injury.
Now, Mark, I do want to say, and it's pivoting slightly, it's a different positional unit, but you have had a take so hot that I'm putting on oven mitts, pure insane takery about a move that the Stars might make during the trade deadline. Do you want to run that by Taylor and I?
I would love to, and I think based on our pregame here that I may have some support in the room, certainly not from you, but... But yeah, I think a really good roll of the dice is a John Klingberg deal. And one of the things that we're missing is I think we found that Miro's pretty good at the power play, but he's not dynamic on the power play. And I think that's kind of come out here and is part of the problem that we've had. I think it's something that you can do at a pretty reasonable level. Anaheim's just looking for, they've mismanaged him so much this year. They're just hoping to get any kind of assets back for that. It's not a long-term deal. He has potential, a real good potential upside. And if it doesn't work out, play him as your seventh guy. Who cares?
Run with the guys you got. Our defense can't get worse.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And I think if they're asking for a third or fourth round pick, it's so low risk that you have to do it. And we need a puck mover who's not Miro Heiskanen. He can do it, but that is not, he's defense first before he is puck moving. And I think that, you know, I don't know if you guys read David Castillo's article, but like, you know, he says we don't need goals, we need offense, and we need someone to drive the offense. And that's what John Klingberg is good at. And I think he would be so good under Pete DeBoer's system. He was made for that. He wants the defense to be involved in playmaking. John Klingberg is going to do that.
I mean, it makes me think the way that it would work, and I would say that I'm more of a skeptic than an outright no at this point. It reminds me of how Edmonton was using Tyler Barrie and protecting mm-hmm. him 5-on-5, you know, more of that specials, right? Playing third line minutes third pairing minutes as a 5-on-5 player, you know, limited to no time on the penalty kill, but being a real force on the power play. And I think if you were to do it, that would be the recipe. I guess my big problem is this is a team that has trouble defending anyway. So like, who comes out of the lineup for that? Like realistically, because I for what as much as we want this to be the answer, I don't think Ryan Suter is going to be the answer to that question. So
no.
It's an obvious answer, and people are going to hate the answer because the answer is Nils Lundqvist. And Nils probably goes, you know, send Nils down to Cedar Park for an incredible Calder Cup run.
Well, but that my next point is, so one, yeah, you risk, and I don't know what the actual risk would be, but there is at least some risk to the developmental arc of Nils Lundqvist. And you also, that pretty much, and maybe that the team's fine with this, there were some quotes, I think Saad wrote about it, there were some quotes from Jim Nill about how he wants him to be in the lineup, whichever lineup it is. But I think a move like that also pretty much means no Thomas Harley this season. Yeah. And maybe that's a good thing to your point, load up for a run at the Calder, but I am definitely one of the fans that is in the Harley is ready for the NHL, put him in the lineup camp. And I think moving for someone like Klingberg would take that space.
No, I agree. And this is a short-term deal. This is not something that you leverage off into next year. This is something where if you're talking about bringing in somebody who with the roll of the dice could be a major impact player who could take you to that next level, I think Klingberg adds value to the Dallas Stars that he doesn't add to other teams. He's somebody that we're very familiar with. And if it doesn't work out, we're stuck with what we have, which is fine.
Yeah. Like I said, it can't get worse. And then if it doesn't work out, you just bring Nils back up, you know, or put him back in.
Right. No, exactly. You're exactly right.
And so,
I just worry about the noise. Then all of a sudden you've got another offseason worth of Dallas should re-sign John Klingberg. And to some degree, and this is a champagne problem, as an old mentor used to say, but what if he plays well? Then you have a more complicated decision to make. And obviously it's good that he plays well. That would be the ideal, because if he plays well, the team does well. But if he plays well, then there's going to be pressure to re-sign him. And then you're really talking about how much of Nils Lundqvist and how much of Thomas Harley are you willing to give up for John Klingberg?
I mean, I would say the Dallas Stars are in a great negotiation position there, because they have the future. Klingberg just went through a free agency where he priced himself out of the market.
And then it didn't go well for him after that.
Exactly. And so.
But it wouldn't be about even bringing him back at a good cost. It'd be about bringing him back at all. It's a roster spot. One of the issues this team has right now is
our hands are so tied to our defense, and then the movement costs.
There's seven of them, and they're all under contract for next season already.
Right. So if you bring sentimental value, you could ask the exact same question about Dodonov.
Okay.
But the difference, though, is there's a spot that if he plays well, there's a spot in the lineup for him.
Well, except that's a Bork spot or a Stankoven spot.
Yeah.
Question. Do we re-sign Joel Hanley?
I mean, my answer to that is no, but I'm an avowed. I'm on team. What's the point of Joel Hanley?
Yeah, I feel like just Jim Neal, he values him as, you know, someone super cheap that, and he does well when he slots in after not playing for a while, but that's just clogging up a spot.
But I mean, it's clogging up well a spot that doesn't
he
play.
Gives you the same 9 minutes that he gives you anytime. So is there really, do you need that?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, and here's where I'll disagree with you. Hanley can come in after sitting for a month and give you a low event offensive and defensive game.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, the people you're talking up is that, okay, let's bring up a prospect and take that seventh spot. Well, that just turns the next question into, okay, now we're complaining because they're in the press box.
To Jim Mills'
point, I would be completely livid if Thomas Harley was riding the pine, you know, coming in and out of the lineup as the seventh defenseman. That'd be horrible.
That's what I'm thinking could be the driving factor to signing him again. And our hands are already tied so much, and I don't want that. But I could see Jim Neal doing it for that reason.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll wrap this up with a quick prediction. And Taylor, you're new, so you have to go first. You know, again, putting on your Jim Neal mustache, what do the Stars do between now and the deadline?
Oh man, I think we make another low event trade. I think we acquire someone that's not going to cost us very much and just hope it works.
Forward or defenseman?
If it's not John Klingberg, I think it's a forward.
Mark, how about you?
I think we beat Arizona and we beat Chicago.
I love it. I'm kind of, Taylor, I'm more in your camp. I could see them doing something from a depth perspective, more along the lines of what if Luke Glendinning comes out of, you know what I mean? Like shoring up. I think you are probably right from a cap and a cost perspective. And based on what's left in the market, I think you're both right. This Dadonov is probably it as far as middle six support goes. The only other move I could see, and I think the defense is just, unless you find somebody that's willing to, you know, take on a suitor, or, you know, unless you find somebody that's willing to take somebody off your hands, I don't see them having the ability. I could see them bringing in a piece, sort of a Joel Hanley, but for the forwards, where if somebody in that fourth line grouping, you know, one of the penalty kill speed faceoffs guy, you know, bringing in some insurance on that level. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't think they're going to, I really liked it. And Mark, I think it was you that said this. I think Dadonov was Nil's way of saying, you guys have played well, you've earned a little bit of help, here you go, now let's see where we can get. Versus, you know, they're not going to be in the Bo Horvat sweepstakes.
Right.
And I have one more hot take.
Okay.
And this will blow up Twitter. I think we don't bring up both Freddies. I think we bring up a Freddie and a student each.
Mm.
Let's do something crazy and bring up Maverick Bork. What is it going to hurt?
It's prospect Bork, logic.
Bork is on a trend.
I think the Dallas Stars are more comfortable bringing up Studenich, playing him 11 minutes in a third, fourth flex line, you know, flex role. I think that especially, you know, Maverick started the season struggling a little bit, has been much better lately. Mm-hmm. I think it's the Thomas Harley / prospect logic. I think if you're the Dallas Stars, you would rather Maverick Bork be playing as an important piece of an AHL lineup than playing spot minutes on the bottom of an NHL lineup.
Okay, so what about Damiani? Because I feel like he slots better in, or slots better in and out of fourth line.
I don't think he's played well enough.
Damiani is probably bottom line for Texas right now. I hate to say it, but his rookie of the year, it's kind of looking like a flash in the pan.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, I don't mind Studenich. He's just, you know, he's going to just be there. Just like Freddie.
The thing about Damiani, right, is he's got 8 goals, 13 assists in 43 AHL games. And I think 21 points isn't going to get you a sniff.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not, like I said, I think the Stars, especially with the Dadonov deal, they're much more, they're calling up to fill out the bottom end of the lineup. And I don't think Damiani contributes in the same way in that role as a guy like Studenich. I think they're much more comfortable giving guys like that spot minutes than giving it to, you know, a Damiani or a, you know, Maverick Bork, something like that.
Yeah. I would say if I was them, I would actually give a few games to Riley Barber, just rewarding him for the great year he's having. And he's a goal scorer. So that's something that we've been missing on the fourth line. And it'd be interesting to see what can happen with that.
He certainly looked the business in the game I saw. But it will be interesting no matter what. Even if ultimately they do nothing, it will be interesting to see where Dallas sits once the great Eastern migration of talented hockey players has concluded. They've got Colorado. I think they've won 6 in a row now, 7 in a row, breathing down their necks. I think the Avs officially passed Dallas for points percentage lead in the Central Division. So, you know, Dallas needs to start winning some games. They're not in any danger of falling out of the playoffs, but, you know, seeding starts to matter and matchups matter. And this is a winnable Western Conference. So I think you hope for a resurgence. And you know, it's been a good season on the balance. Hopefully they get over this little hump and it's a good finish as well. And Taylor, we're going to have you back on the podcast. This has been fantastic. Mark's jet setting schedule will allow it. Mark, as always, appreciate your insights and insane takery. And I say that with affection. KT for stitching it all together, making us sound like $1 million, fixing it in post. Those listening, don't forget to like, don't forget to download, do the whole thing, show us your love. And we will check back in by the time we speak next. There will be a couple of games against bad teams. The big old showdown against Colorado and the trade deadline will have passed. So we should have a few things to talk about. This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.